Welcome to Eye to Eye, the podcast of the Royal College of Ophthalmologists. My name is Sunil Mamtora, and I will be your host. Today, I'm speaking with Melanie Hingarani, a consultant ophthalmologist from Moorfields Eye Hospital, and today we're going to be talking about the NHS England National Outpatient Transformation Programme. Melanie, thank you very much for joining me today to talk about this really interesting topic. And before we go into more detail about this, I was just wondering if you could tell the listeners a bit about yourself and your role in this.
Well, thanks very much, Sin, and thanks for having me. So, as you said, I'm a consultant ophthalmologist at Moorfields Hospital. I specialise in paediatrics, particularly paediatric cornea. I'm also chair of the Royal College of Ophthalmologists Professional Standards. But the thing I'm really talking about today is my role as the one of the three clinical leads for the National Outpatient Transformation Programme, which is run by NHS England.
So how would you describe this Outpatient Transformation Programme to an ophthalmologist who might not be aware of the programme?
I suspect actually a lot of ophthalmologists are not aware, because it's been, to a certain extent, slightly under the radar so far. So this was actually planned before COVID. Probably people will remember the NHS long-term plan, which is about, you know, transforming how we do sort of hospital care and hospital clinics. And a programme was planned, and ophthalmology was down to be an early priority, and then COVID hit. And so the programme slightly morphed to look at both long-term transformation of services, but also how we can restore services and maintain safe services now that we're in the COVID environment. And, you know, very excitingly, I think ophthalmology's been chosen as the specialty to get started with first, with other specialties coming rapidly behind.
And which other specialties are coming next?
Dermatology is being done, orthopaedics and musculoskeletal, and they're also looking at cardiology and cardiac surgery. But I think the expectation is that they're going to do everything, or as much as humanly possible.
Of course,
it's a five year program, so it's quite an extensive thing.
Of course. So, you know, beyond your powers of persuasion, why was ophthalmology actually chosen to be the first?
It's interesting, isn't it? Because we everyone knows that ophthalmology's had, you know, real difficulties. Well, everyone in ophthalmology knows, perhaps I should say, that, you know, 10, 15 years, we have, you know, increasing delays, we don't have enough capacity, ever-rising demand, patients are being harmed. It's all getting grim, and nobody would listen, to be honest. Our college of optometrists, RNIB, lots of people were raising concerns, but it just didn't seem to translate into any change. And then there were lots of recommendations from Getting It Right First Time, or from the HSIB did a report into delayed glaucoma. And again, recommendations, same recommendations over years, no real change. And so we had to try and make the case in a way that I think that NHS England would want to be involved and do something. I think the problem is that if you just say, oh, we've got terrible problems, we need more doctors, more this, more that, everyone needs more. And actually it's probably a bit depressing for the people receiving that, even the people in power, because they haven't actually got much more money. So what we were able to do was show that ophthalmology had the highest rate of increase of demand of pretty much any specialty except geriatrics, that we had all the evidence that we collected over years that patients were being harmed. We made the offer even before this programme that we would like to work in partnership with NHS England to do it together. And crucially, I think this is what really tipped it, we were able to make a case that there's a really big opportunity in ophthalmology, that actually, because of all the work that's gone before, we thought long and hard about what needs to be done. And we were already full of ideas, and we've got loads of ideas for technical solutions and virtual clinics and all sorts of things. And we're ready to do it. And we don't have all those dependencies, say, with beds or other specialties. So we could, in fact, transform in a quite neat little way without having to rely on the rest of the NHS. So we dangled the prize in front of powers that be in a way that I think really appealed.
That sounds great. You know, as you've just said there, we often hear this kind of proclamation of, you know, we need to change this, we need to change that, we need to, you know, see this number of patients, we need to solve these problems. And as ophthalmologists working in the hospital eye service, we often hear the same from our managers in terms of the bureaucratic measures that they try to enforce, but nothing seems to ever work. And it kind of just tires everyone out from all these types of news. What would you say is the clinical lead? You know, how would you say that this scheme is any different to any of the schemes that have gone in the past and failed?
I mean, of course, we could fail. I really hope we don't. I think there are differences. So one of them is about involving everybody to work together. So we've had a situation where there's quite a lot of different organisations and sectors in the, you know, the wider eye care world. You have, you know, the College of Optometrists. You also have loads of optical organisations, some of which have a more commercial focus, some of which have a more clinical focus. You have lots of patient charities. You have service transformation people within NHS Improvement. You have all sorts of people in the space saying kind of similar but slightly different things. So the first thing about this was it pulled everybody together into the steering group. So everybody's involved, and whatever comes out, people know that it's been signed up to by all those bodies who all say this is compliant with national guidance. We recommend this. So whether you're a nurse, an optometrist, an orthoptist, whoever you are, you know that it's been signed off by the people pertinent to you. So that's quite powerful, I think. I think the other thing is that it's about implementation. So we don't really want to spend ages actually giving guidelines. What we want to do is pull together what we know, present it to people saying you don't have to do all the basic, you know, you don't have to go and look at all the evidence, you know, in the papers about why these things work. You don't have to check if it's compliant with NICE, et cetera, et cetera. Here's what you need to do. How do you want to do it to make it work for you? So it's much more about implementation. And then we're working alongside people in the regions and in hospitals to try and get it done. And then where they're struggling, we try and make sure that we can pull in the right expert. Now that may be an NHS England commissioning person or somebody who knows about NHS funding. It might also be another region of England who's already done this sort of care and they know how to get over the barriers, and you can pull them in so you can really help people get over the humps. I think the other thing is the degree of attention. Although this is under the radar, it's likely to become quite sort of well known and quite well promoted, and it looks like the programme may be getting even bigger as we go forward. So we've got all this attention and priority on ophthalmology. Everyone wants this to work. So I'm kind of hoping, as the first specialty, they can't allow us to fail. Surely we've got to get this right. And if it's not working well, that you hope that, you know, NHS England and all the big guns will step in and help us to do it. And they can bring people to the table, like Health Education England for the workforce, in a way that perhaps the college by itself couldn't.
Yeah, that's really exciting, actually. And it really sounds like more macro rather than micro interventions.
I think that's fair. I think it's meant to be quite big picture. You know, we have bodies that can give recommendations for, you know, what we do, the detail of what we do in hospital. The college is really good for that. Getting it right first time is really good for that. You know, we have other bodies that might tell optometrists what to do. But it's about the kind of the whole pathway, looking at everything really broadly, looking at all the resource, all the capacity across the system, right through from, you know, optometry to social services and low vision rehabilitation. How can we use all that resource better? I don't know if you know, but if you look at the money in the pot, if you look at everything, including general ophthalmic services, i.e. the sight test and the whole lot, there's something like 2.6 billion sits in, you know, disorders of eyes, vision and spectacles. Now, when you look at it like that, you've got to think to yourself, that's a big pot of money. Are there really clever ways in which we can use all of that better? Because at the moment, it's all very fragmented. You know, you have some money for sight tests, some money for highly specialised care, some other money for specialised care, some money for screening, some money for hospitals, and so it goes on. But by putting all that resource together and thinking hard, starting with a blank piece of paper, could we do this differently? I'm hoping that we'll get to a really different place, because it is, in fact, a lot of money. It's just not used terribly well.
Yeah. I know you mentioned earlier on that you were talking about technical solutions to bring together non-ophthalmologists with the hospital eye service. Would you be able to share any specific interventions or measures that have either been planned or already implemented that will hope to join together services, either, you know, from GPs or from optometrists with the hospital?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's a really key part of this, that the two things we've really realised is that if we don't sort out the commissioning and the money to pay for things differently, and if we don't sort out digital connectivity, none of this is going to work. And to be honest, workforce is quite important as well. But without the first two, we can't really get anywhere. And I think digital's actually quite exciting. So we have three clinical leads in the programme. So I'm the consultant clinical lead. We have an optometrist called Claire Roberts, and we have an ophthalmologist in training, Guy Moll, who's training in the Oxford region. And he's helping to lead the digital stuff. And he's very tech savvy and he's very good. And the work's been led by NHSX. So it's really been driven, again, absolutely at the top. Now, anyone who's taken any interest in this will probably know that maybe a couple of years ago, you know, it was really, really difficult to connect with optometrists. There's all these information governance problems. They haven't got access to secure networks. They certainly haven't got any access to NHS IT systems. And so you were still forced with basically dealing with paper, or because when things, you know, more modern times, we've all had to refer through, you know, the choose and book, the e-referral service system, which could only be accessed by GPs. Optomers then had to go through the GPs, and it was just all really sort of cumbersome. Also, we couldn't even, we still can't at the moment, can't really write back to them. You know, that way in which we automatically copy letters to GPs. It doesn't work like that in optometry. There's no database for optometrists like there is for GPs. There's no automatic system. What that means is we don't even write back to them most of the time after hospital visits. They've no idea what's going on. They're just not joined up. But in the last sort of year or two, all these solutions have emerged in the tech world for how to share across different organisations, particularly between secondary and primary care, some of which are optometric specific and some of which just exist but could be purposed for that. At the absolute entry level, NHS England's done a really good job at actually getting everybody onto NHS Mail, at least. So, you know, every week that goes by, there's quite a few more optometry practices that are on NHS Mail. So that alone would just help. At least we have a secure connection. But there are quite a few pathways now that have connectivity so that people can refer directly into ERS from optometry. They can receive feedback, and actually they can share images, including in some cases full file manipulable OCTs. So you can really get the information, and either you can triage or make a decision, or in fact, you as the ophthalmologist can feedback to the optometrist and say, this doesn't need to come, or you could manage like this. So there are loads of solutions. In terms of bringing all this together, the programme has put together with NHSX, or is putting together, a procurement framework for all of these systems. And at the moment, organisations are coming and submitting data to try and get on the framework. So everyone will be able to see what systems offer what, do they comply with the various standards, both in general digital safety terms and also in ophthalmology functionality. And it can help take people through the systems available. What we hope is that procurement framework, the standards will rise every year, moving towards real interoperability with hospital systems. So hopefully, as well as supplying people with connectivity solutions that already exist, it drives up the standards of all of them as well. So I think this is one of the things that's really exciting and is really changing fast.
You know, I think that is really exciting. And as a practicing ophthalmologist, I'm always encountering, you know, these nightmare situations where you can't open one OCT file in another OCT software because it's a different manufacturer. And if an optometrist uses a Topcon and we use Heidelberg, then we can only view screenshots rather than the whole thing. So does this plan aim to address some of those issues then?
Yeah. So I think that what everyone's been concentrating on at the moment is just do something to make things better quickly, even if it's not perfect, because we just need to be able to share some stuff back and forth, even if it's not absolutely ideal. You know, at least it helps us provide a bit more capacity. And that's the kind of COVID restoration piece. But going forward, there's going to be much more in terms of transformation. And I think there's a sort of working group that helps feed into this, multidisciplinary. I think most people feel that it's not about saying, here's a free national system to do, you know, eye care across ophthalmology and optometry. It's probably not workable. These huge programs tend to fall over and never deliver. And every hospital's got other requirements apart from ophthalmology to consider about their EPR. So everything is going to have to be about interoperability and setting standards for quality and for communication, I think. I think that that's the transformative piece. One thing that will come out quite early, there's a draft already, but it should start to be promoted in January, is a thing called a digital playbook. So this is a live interactive website, and if when people go on this, they'll be able to see loads and loads of different case studies of people already using these digital connectivity things for ophthalmology, how it works, what's the functionality, who's used it, what are the benefits. And again, I think by us sort of pulling together that information, we realised how much was already there. So that's something to look forward to for anyone who's interested in the new year.
So as a Moorfields consultant, you know, you must encounter issues all the time because it's such a big hospital and you see so many different use case scenarios of technology. Would you say there's one specific single thing that perhaps annoys you the most that you're hoping that this transformation program will help with?
In terms of my day-to-day practice, I suspect not. My main concern, I think, of a lot of people is the number of different times you have to log into it, all those different systems. If only you could just have one login and everything would open. But that I think, is not, sadly, going to be solved by this. I think one of my real bugbears is about just sending a letter or some sort of information to an optometrist who's referred to you. You know, it is in fact really frustrating because even if you know you should and even if you know you want to, it's just such a faff. You know, who are they? What's their address? Am I writing to the right person? You know, it's not a touch of a button, and I'm keen to do this. So I think for me, that will make a huge difference. Just simply us replying to say what we did. We've seen the patient. They had this wrong with them. This is, you know, what we're doing makes a big difference. We were working in the program with one sort of hospital and their system, and they were setting up a system in which their primary care optometrists could just see a key data set out of their ophthalmology EPR. They wouldn't be able to automatically refer in, but they could see what had been done, and from that work they could see that up to 30% of referrals wouldn't need to come because the optometrist would just know this has already been seen, it's being managed. So actually just those little bits of communication can make huge amounts of difference.
Yeah, that does sound extremely useful. And, you know, to try and say this in the most politically correct way as possible, you know, I do feel that optometrists might care more about what's going on with their referrals than necessarily GPs might, who are not always as engaged with ophthalmologists as optometrists. Do you think that we might be going in the direction that Scotland's gone in, whereby the majority of referrals to the hospital eye service come from optometrists rather than GPs?
I think we'd better. I think that it's the only way. I mean, you know, there are some GPs that are interested, but broadly, they don't have the kit, they don't have the training. And as you say, most don't have the interest or experience. Now, I know people get frustrated about referrals from optometrists, but actually, you know, they're actually pretty good. When I was originally appointed as a consultant, actually, I worked in Cambridgeshire before I came to Moorfields, and there's really well-established pathways with optometrists. And I can sort of tell you, in my first cataract list, I was utterly appalled when my colleague said to me, "Oh, by the way, none of these people have been seen in hospital. They've actually just been referred by optoms to have their cataract, and they've just had a nurse-led consent." And I was absolutely horrified. This is appalling. It's like more than 10 years ago. Turns out it's absolutely fantastic. Generally speaking, optometrists do a really good job. And if you put some training and, you know, or professional development, help them to understand the hospital system and give them feedback when it's not right, I think you get really, really good quality care out of most people, and particularly the optometrists who start to get stuck in to some of these, you know, more high level commissioned pathways. You know, they're quite experienced. Many of them might have worked in hospital. They might have higher qualifications. That actually can be very good.
Yeah, no, I would completely agree with that. So I'm making an assumption here that this transformation program is going to primarily benefit subspecialties within ophthalmology which have the biggest backlogs, so, you know, cataract, medical retina, glaucoma. Am I right in assuming that?
You're absolutely right, and that's where it's partly big wins. You know, if you do so, the things that the program are looking at: urgent, medical retina, glaucoma, cataract. If you do those, you're going to be getting 60 to 70% of ophthalmology right for most DGHs. And it's also where the most work has been done in previously to work out what we should be doing. So yeah, and we also have the evidence that those are the specialties where people are not so much cataract perhaps, but retina and glaucoma is where people are going blind, unavoidably when they're not being seen.
Of course. So you're a paediatric ophthalmologist and you're the clinical lead of this transformation program. So what are you going to do to try and improve paediatric ophthalmology?
So that's a really hard question. Now, I think anyone who knows anything at all about paediatric ophthalmology will know that we have at least as bad capacity problems as everyone else. You know, you can't find a paediatric ophthalmic consultant these days for love nor money, and it's extremely difficult. I suspect the program as it stands is not going to get stuck into the detail of paediatric ophthalmology. You can't cure everything for everyone. What I think is that if we set this up right so that we improve care across the board, we increase capacity, we release resource, it's going to actually benefit every specialty, because whatever we set up, you know, there's so much scope for non-medical extended roles, both in the community and in the hospital for paediatrics. You know, extended role optometrists and orthoptists and nurses do fantastic paediatric eye care in a lot of hospitals. We could really build on that. A lot more could be done by primary care optometrists with things like amblyopia, as long as they were a bit more connected to the hospital, so everyone felt comfortable about the clinical governance. So I think that even if we don't specifically concentrate on peds, there'll be a lot of knock-on effects. I think that if I can slip a bit of paediatrics in there, I will, but I think probably can't quite get to that until we've done something in the other specialties.
Yeah, of course. So my final question really is, you know, as a result of this programme, you know, say 5 years from now, what would your vision of the landscape of our specialty be following on from the benefits that this scheme will bring?
To me, the single biggest thing is that we would abolish all these delays and you would have zero serious incidents of people going, you know, getting serious sight loss because they just didn't get their follow-up on time. That is, to me, what we need to eliminate. What I'd also like to see is, you know, we won't have solved everything. Although it's a five-year programme, I suspect that, you know, the concentration on ophthalmology is going to be 18 months, 2 years, I think. You know, who knows how these things pan out. And we will not solve every problem. What I'd like to do is move things enough that you've got a momentum that is all then going to happen so that everything becomes sustainable, you know, not in the carbon sense, but in the kind of, you know, the resources we've got and the development that we've set in motion can mean that we don't then build up the problem again, that as things change, as the demand increases, the capacity flexes, we do different things, and we've set it all up so that even though the demand may rise, we'll be able to cope with it. So I guess that's my vision, and I hope that we'll be, you know, all working together, all sort of joined up, all connected, and actually I hope that we'll have set the basis for really exciting things like artificial intelligence and automated decision making from all the sort of technical connections and training that we've done.
Well, Melanie, thank you so much for talking with me today. You've actually made me really excited about the future of ophthalmology, so thank you for that.
No, thank you. Well, if I've done that, that's a good start. I think people should be excited by this because I actually think it's really exciting. And I think we're just on the first step and people are going to hear an awful lot more about this, I hope.
As always, we'd love to hear from you. If you want to get involved, talk about your work or have any feedback, send us a message at communications@rcops.ac.uk.